Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
The proverb, physician, heal thyself, comes from Luke 4:23. The proverb feels applicable today as the profession strains under increasing demands and burnout. Thankfully, efforts in some quarters are being made to assist healthcare providers. Today, we find hope via a medical director of professional staff experience. Next on Sound Practice. My guest today is John Sawyer. Dr. Sawyer is a neuropsychologist with Ochsner Medical Center in New Orleans. Dr. Sawyer is the medical director of professional staff experience. He spends his days on the front line of combating physician burnout and promoting well-being of his professional colleagues. John Sawyer, welcome to Sound Practice.
Hey, good to see you, Mike.
Thank you so much for being with us today. I've been looking forward to this. So help me out. What is a neuropsychologist? What do you do and how did you become one?
I think my parents are still don't know how to explain it after all these years. So clinically, a neuropsychologist, half my time is spent assessing patients that have cognitive disorders like Alzheimer's disease and other kind of dementias. And then the other kind of hat I wear at Ochsner is I'm the medical director of physician and APP experience, which is just a fancy title for how do we help our teams and providers thrive despite the modern medical machine. Ochsner has, and Dr. Geiger, our chief well-being officer, we've been really in this conversation around professional satisfaction and burnout for almost like 8 years now. And certainly many others have been in it for even longer. But I never sought out to do work like this. But then when you kind of see your colleagues struggling and also seeing your partners leaving the practice of medicine, it's noticing something is wrong and not working. And then how do you help people rediscover joy in practice has been a real kind of thrill of mine over the past several years.
Very nice. So you're part of the Office of Professional Wellbeing at Ochsner Medical Center. Tell me about the office. When did it start? Who else works in it? What type of activities do you do?
Yeah, so around 2017, our chief medical officer and our now chief well-being officer wanted to do something about physician well-being and burnout and job stress and retention. And so a work group was started. And from that work group, that grew into an actual department within the organization to support providers and kind of foster a sense of well-being. And it really kind of focuses on kind of three things. So one is, how do you help the individual? We know that for a lot of medicine and healthcare, there are things outside of our control. We're not going to be able to fix Medicare fee schedules necessarily, or ask patients to lower their expectations of us. So how do you build a workforce that is more and more resilient? The resilient word has kind of gotten a bad rap recently because it kind of assumes you're not resilient. And how I like to think about, or how we like to think about resilience, is something that you continually develop over time rather than something that you either have or don't, like you know, like your eye color. And then another part is practice ease. So much of a doctor's day is clunky, not top of license, and how do we improve the ease of practice? And then also kind of the third kind of stool is kind of team and culture work, and particularly how do you develop leaders so that way they can support their physicians? You kind of heard the phrase, people don't leave a job, they leave a manager. And I think and a lot of the research shows that the one over leader has probably the strongest effect size when it comes to why physicians are feeling burned out. And so making sure that one over leader has a leadership development and training curriculum and program that can better support physicians. That's kind of how we think about it. The office, it started out working just with physicians and advanced practice providers. It was where it was originally scoped. And then when COVID hit, it became really apparent that we couldn't just focus on our providers. And so that has now included all really 40,000 employees at Ochsner. So nurses, our administrative counterparts, and everyone else in the organization. I think it so much of a physician's day is made, is it kind of made better, assuming they have excellent, engaged support staff, kind of doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. And when they don't, as we know, physicians are trained that the buck always stops with them. And so if you can't, if we can't trust our support staff, if we can't delegate effectively, delegate with trust, as I like to say, then all of a sudden, you know, you're, as a physician, having to do all of it. And so part of it was making sure that our staff was also well, because when they're well, then they're going to provide their A game when they're helping out the physician on their team.
Helping foster wellness for physicians may be different than for staff. Was that a challenge, that certain tools work for certain types of positions, but not for others? Or am I completely wrong on that assumption?
So some, you know, I kind of think that for most of life's really tough, persistent issues, when you get an inch below the surface, it's oftentimes the same for most people. There are a lot of unique factors that physicians bring to their work, both who they are as people, what kind of person and personality decides to become a physician, the inherent process of medical training, the job in and of itself, all of a sudden creates, you know, a unique, and then finally, the medical machine. It is an endless sea of need. Mm-hmm. And so when you put all that together, it becomes kind of uniquely challenging for physicians. Unlike anyone else in the medical machine, anyone else, they cannot check out. They can't say, and I'm not saying that nurses check out, to be really clear, our corporate partners check out. But at the end of the day, it's my license and my patient. And I'm ultimately responsible. And so it just creates a unique challenge and opportunity for organizations to make healthcare a place that physicians want to work. Part of why I'm so passionate about this is we have kind of a double-headed kind of crisis around healthcare workforce, Mike. So one is we have a aging population and less physicians on average in the United States. And so you have less physicians, and then of the physicians that are coming into practice, most of us, none of us want to spend our life at the hospital. So now we have reduced discretionary time. You know, if you think about the model of the physician in the 1950s and 60s who just lived at the hospital, I think about my friends, parents who were doctors. Many of them did not go into healthcare because they saw what the impact was on their family in terms of not seeing mom or dad, or particularly dad. And so now we have less physicians and physicians with less discretionary, offering up less discretionary time. And we really got to create a practice environment where people want to stay, and also that it's sustainable. So that way they can both be all in at work and all in at life. And you got to, but how do you get those two things together?
Well, if you can do that, you've cracked the code. So you're working on a great thing for the profession. I understand that you do some coaching of physicians, and I assume that that's on a one-on-one type of basis, that you coach physicians. Do you find that the issues that they raise vary depending upon their age or their specialty, or do you see issues relatively constant across the profession?
Yeah, I think there is, it's been a few, you know, the past several years coaching physicians, I have kind of come up with a framework that how I see kind of common physician kind of archetypes. And, you know, whenever you meet with a psychologist, we love putting people in categories and boxes. So I'm not wanting the listener to think that when I think about certain kind of personality types of kind of stressed out, burned out physicians, that it's all or nothing. I would say I've been probably at least three out of the four at some point in my life. And oftentimes you can be all four at the same time. I kind of recently published an article in the Physician Leadership Journal around this, called The Archetypes of Burned Out Physicians. And what part of what happens for leaders when they're working with physicians or trying to understand what their issue is, you got to kind of have a little bit of a framework to start. And think about this, like how most physician leaders have been trained in terms of like the DISC model. And are you familiar with the DISC model, where you have like someone who might be, it's a wheel and it's broken up into four. You might have someone who's a little bit more of a dominant style, or someone who's more of an idea person, or someone who's more of a, you know, stability focused, and are the Myers-Briggs kind of personality inventory that is kind of familiar. But basically, when you kind of get an understanding of how someone operates, then you can start to kind of tailor your approach to them. So like if someone's really shy, I'm probably not going to go bang on their door and say, "Hey, what's up?" I'm probably going to think about how I approach them. And I think leaders, when you're kind of getting a sense of, hey, what's causing one of my docs to be stressed at work, to be burned out, or I like to say, Mike, you'll find this funny, it's called it suboptimal employee experience. So, you know, we're very obsessed with patient experience, and we think about, well, what's the employee experience like of the physician? And so in my coaching, I just have thought about these kind of four types. And it can be a really helpful way to think about what solutions would be effective for them.
Well, tell me about the four types. Can you lay them out a little bit for me?
Absolutely. So we think about, so the kind of first, I'll go ahead and give the four, and then we'll go into it if that's okay. So
sure.
So one is overengaged. So like someone who's just obviously doing too much. We have the people pleaser. Having a lot of trouble, you know, being okay with others or upset with them. The perfectionist or obsessive kind of physician, that pulls a lot in our profession in healthcare. You know, you don't want a physician to say, you know, I kind of gave it my C game today. You know, I was kind of tired. And then finally, a cynic, kind of overly problem focused. And these are individuals that are constantly focused on why something's not going to work. And so just to kind of loop back, so an overengaged person, this is really important for physician leaders to think about, because you rarely think of them as someone who's at risk for burned out because they're really engaged in the organization. They're doing a lot. They, you know, oftentimes say yes to tasks. What happens for many of them, though, and I say this from personal experience, is that when you are overengaged, it's usually because you want to do a lot in order to get somewhere in your career. And then what happens is that you say yes to a lot of things that you think are going to get you somewhere, but don't. And then you get kind of frustrated, resentful, and when it doesn't work out that way. And then the leaders are thinking, well, I just thought you wanted to do that. I didn't realize you thought it was going to mean a promotion or more money or a different role. And because remember, leaders get promoted because they do a lot. So we kind of think, well, that's the formula. I'll just do a lot and it'll happen. And that isn't necessarily the case. Or you do so much and then you wind up having too much. You can't do that well, because at some point it reaches a tipping point where you just can't add anymore. And so for the overengaged physician, a lot of leadership is about thinking, wait, is this person doing too much? And I can guarantee you all the leaders listening right now know people in their team that are clearly doing too much. And most leaders know that, but they have a hard time saying, hey, is this what you want to be doing? Or are you just kind of reflexively saying yes to all this? And the main reason this happens is that leaders don't want to intimate to their direct report, hey, I don't think you can handle it. The overengaged person doesn't want to say, hey, I can't handle it as well. But all of a sudden, we're avoiding this thing that's going to start to mushroom. And so, then when it mushrooms, I think a big sign for leaders is when these overengaged people all of a sudden seem really disengaged or not following up on all the stuff that they said they were going to do. So then the question is, leaders have to really get enough psychological safety with this person, this overengaged physician, Mike, to say, what are you really after? What do you really want? And it's okay to be ambitious. Let's just name it. Be really clear about it. Remember, as a leader, you were ambitious enough to want to be a leader. So ambition's not a bad thing. Have them say it and then say, okay, well, let's figure out what's getting you in that direction. Let's figure out what's not actually going to get you there. And then what can you offload? So the key task is for the leader, for the overengaged person, is having them be safe enough to say what they want, and then also being okay enough to offload things that are not going to get them where they want to go. Does that make sense?
It does.
And it's important to remember that oftentimes overengaged people then worry, oh, I'm going to dump on someone else if I give up something, like if I let go of a task. Remember, something you don't want to do anymore is going to be an opportunity for someone else, more than likely. Also, if you say no to it, or you stop doing it, it could mean something. You could make it mean, hey, I can't handle it. It could also mean, hey, we can't do everything well at the same time. That's just not a reality. I think one of the challenges of physician leaders in particular, like a very unique challenge for physician leaders nationally, is that physicians are clinicians and physician leaders at the same time. And we all have these little percent times allocated. Does that make sense to all of our different roles? And it's supposed to add up to 100%, but it winds up being 300%. Yeah. And you have to toggle between all the different, hey, am I a leader hat? Am I a finance hat? Am I a quality hat? Where am I at any moment? So you can't do all that well. So you got to really be clear about what you're going to say yes to. That's the overengaged person. The people pleaser, believe it or not, we have this model in medicine that physicians are, you know, overly dominant and yelling and, you know, gruff with all their staff. I would say there's a lot more people pleaser than there is the irritable yelling version of the physician. And this is where someone frequently has trouble speaking up about what they need, are much more important. They have really weak boundaries around their time. They let patient visits go on longer than they should. They would rather do the task than delegate it to someone. The question a leader has to get at with this person is having them be safe enough to say what's not working well. Because remember, a people pleaser wants to please you. So if you say, hey, what's going on? They're going to say fine. Like that's what they're trained. That's what they want to do. They're not going to say I have a problem. So you have to say what's not working well. Things are not working well. And then really having them get better at self-advocacy, at setting up better boundaries of times. I call it inhibiting the yes reflex. They have to constantly inhibit this yes reflex over and over and over again. So that's the people pleaser. The perfectionist, there's a lot of physicians out there who believe their way is the best way to do it. And how this kind of shows up is their documentation is really inefficient because they are over documenting. They're doing a lot of things below their license because they think only they can be the one to refill amoxicillin. They have to be the one to see all their patients rather than a colleague who could cover for them. So the key thing for the leader is to help them understand and see the cost of perfectionism rather than just the upside. Does that make sense? Because If you're doing everything in a kind of obsessive perfectionistic way, well, then all of a sudden at some point you're not going to have energy and time for another task that might actually need your full obsessiveness. And so we got to recognize that some things actually don't need to be perfect. Like the font doesn't have to look a certain way, or a note could be done in a briefer fashion. So what's the cost and to perfectionism? And then what are they going to stop caring about as much? And then direct their perfectionism to where it matters. Part of it is having them see, hey, I'm not wanting you to do a bad job. I'm wanting you to do a really good job over the all of your career. But if you are a perfectionist or obsessive, at some point, you're just going to spiral out. That's just what happens. The easiest way this looks for physician leaders is you have a ton of people who have so many notes that are not signed, and they're open charts, or hundreds of messages that are yet to be responded to because they're spending so much time on these things. Well, there's a cost to notes that aren't signed. There's a cost to messages that are not answered. And so getting them to see that is a real important fact. And then finally, the cynic. This is the most fun person, the problem finder. The best way you know this is when someone does two things. One is that their default is negative intent. They're like, I knew it. This person's trying to screw us. and then the second thing is any solution you offer, they reject as possible. So we call it a help rejecting complainer, HRC for short. Basically, they love to solicit your help by complaining. So the complaint engages your help reflex as a leader. And then as soon as you offer it, they say, boom, that's not possible. That's not going to work. And that's that cycle over and over and over again. And so the leader really has to know that most people who are cynical did not get that way. They weren't born cynical. They had probably had very accurate, clear times in their professional career where they've been let down by a leader or an organization. I want you to think about this like people who've dated bad people, and then all of a sudden the person that they're currently dating has to make up for all the bad problems someone else did before. And at times as a leader, you're cleaning up mistakes of previous leaders. And so part of it is helping the leader see this isn't about the leader. It could be, but how do we have some sort of reset, some sort of repair, so we can get them to feel like, okay, I've been heard and we got to move forward. And then if so, we know that cynicism isn't working for them. It's not like people are like, I love that rude guy. That rude guy, I really want to help, Yeah. So see, it's not working for you. And are you open to being less cynical? And is the leader open to doing what they need to do to kind of reduce any worry the cynical person has that, it's just the same thing's going to happen again. So that's kind of how I see these kind of four archetypes.
My guess is every audience member today had visions of people as you described each of those four. We all know people that fall into each of those classes. And I think it's very helpful to think of it along those lines.
Yeah. I think it also, it's important for leaders not to go into it and say, okay, I read John's article and you're this, but instead, think of this as just like a framework to think about, hey, like, what if we just worked on you delegating better? Does that make sense? Or what if we worked on you being a little bit less perfect on certain things? And the point of it is that people could be all three, they may be a mix, but it's just, how do we get the individual doing this stuff? Because the reality is that, and this is, I think, and then we can kind of transition, Mike, or whatever you want to do next. But I think leaders are hesitant going here. They're really hesitant going here because it feels like you're blaming the doctor in front of you. You're saying, well, if you were less cynical, or if you were more, less of a people pleaser, things would be better. You're not saying, hey, this is the only problem. Does that make sense? But you are saying in a pie, 40% could be this. Let's at least tackle this 40%. And let me think about how I address the other 60% driving what's stressing you out. Does that make sense? So it's important that they also not see it as just blaming them.
It seems also that you need a corporate culture that allows this without people feeling like it's somehow going to be damaging to their career if they admit that they have issues. Is that true? I mean, they have to be receptive to the help, right?
Yes. They'd be receptive to, I have to think, hey, look, because anytime I'm going to tell my leader something, I have a cost benefit ratio in my head at any time, right? And I kind of think, is this going to benefit me or cost me? And most physicians, when they are going to think about talking about burnout or job stress or things not working well, they're going to think, well, how's this going to play for me, ... And so the leader then has to make sure they're creating an environment where when the physician like adds it all up, at the end of the day, there's more benefit than cost to doing that. And I will say the average leader way overestimates how much they've done that. And here's the best way I would know that leaders can know. How likely would that leader feel comfortable calling their boss and saying, hey, I got some feedback for you. I just wanted to help you get better in life. Most people go, oh, I don't know, I want to do that. And so my point is that it's hard. It's just a challenging thing. And so you got to be really focused on how you create that culture.
You conduct some workshops for folks. Can you tell me a little bit about how you go about having a workshop and what's included?
Yeah. So, thought a lot about if you're in healthcare, inherently, a lot of the times we gather together is about either information dumps from the organization or department or specialty, or how do we do something better, like quality or patient experience. And the workshop it feels about like, how do you do your job better? Not about how like I'm just better in my life. And there is something special about having an organization really commit to having regular workshops and time set aside for your physician group, your provider group, your employees, where the talk is just about them and like what they need in their life and how they can make their life better. It may you feel all of a sudden cared for. And so there is a sneaky organizational imperative to, hey, I like my organization better for sure. So I really felt like we need to have workshops, not just around your job performance, though I do believe that when people are well and their energy is high, that oftentimes is much more correlated to performance than any kind of little talk you're going to do about how to do one, two, or three better. Does that make sense in terms of like, hey, this new skill? Because most people know what to do on average. They know how to engage a patient. They know how to diagnose and treat. It's that when they're tired or cranky or when they're frustrated, that's when things come down. So I've developed a lot of workshops around performance and well-being. So things like, what are the pillars for well-being? How do you navigate change effectively? How do you rebuild your energy rather than just focusing on the time? How do you inhibit your yes reflex? How do you say no in a way that doesn't stress you out or stress the other person out? How do you give feedback in a way that allows you to get up and out what you need to get out? And also, how do you receive it? So these are things that are examples of workshops that we give that touch on people's total life. So then that way, at the end of it, they feel better in their life, and all of a sudden they show up better at work. And that's kind of was the goal of the workshop program that we continue to do.
As our time together draws to a close, I imagine some of the people listening to our discussion today are interested in starting an office of well-being where they work. What advice can you give someone starting down this path?
Yeah, I would So it is something that always feels like the wrong time, because every time you turn around in healthcare, there's a crisis, there's a fire. And I would encourage anyone thinking that to remind themselves that there's never a good time. And when things are hectic and chaotic, that's actually the perfect time. I also know that when we started this in 2017, we had no idea that there would be a worldwide pandemic in 2020. And boy, are we glad we had it up and running before that happened. And so I would say the next crisis is coming. That just is what it is in life. It's not if, but when. And so what are we going to do? And the other is, how do you make your organization a place that is not just attractive, but some HR thinkers use this term, might call it an irresistible organization, or like, it's one where people are like, oh, I really want to be there. It doesn't mean that your people aren't performing well or they aren't working, right? I don't know about you, but there have been lots of times in my life where I've worked a lot and been super happy. So it's not the work intensity as it is, you know, the kind of the overall environment. And so having people connect that this actually makes your organization really attractive. And then how do you get buy-in from leaders? And not in a way that says we're going to focus on how everyone's unhappy. But instead, the whole point of well-being is about both bringing people up and then taking people to the next level. Does that make sense? Because it's not just about burned out people getting to like zero. It's about also taking people who are at 4 and bringing them to 8. Because we know that drives performance. And so you want to think about your well-being journey in kind of multiple paths. It may be that there's a lot of dissatisfaction, disengagement, and burnout. Great. You're going to start there and then go to the next level. It may be that people are kind of okay, but we really could go to the next level. And so thinking about what's the strategy for your organization? And then finally, what's the organizational like financial commitment? Because obviously this work does not generate RBUs. But it does generate value in very significant ways. We think about retention, we think about attrition, think about engagement, people's discretionary time, how easy or harder it is to recruit. So you want to make sure you chain your conversation around what the value is as well.
Great advice. If people would like to reach you, how may they do so?
Yeah, no, I'd love to give talks and love to talk about this kind of work. They can email me. It's just robert.sawyer@oshner.org. And I'm also on LinkedIn, so they can reach me that way too.
And we'll put your contact information in the show notes.
Yeah.
Well, my guest today has been John Sawyer. Dr. Sawyer, thank you so much for being on Sound Practice. This was very interesting.
Absolutely. It's great to see you.
My thanks to John Sawyer. He and his team at Ochsner Medical Center are improving physician lives and helping raise the level of patient care. Well done. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday. Bada-bing, bada-boom.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpractice.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpractice.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org. That man Robin, Rick Capow.